Okay, today is April 15th. We're taping Polemics in the Bible, and we are looking now at a very interesting concept of the nature of certain Rishonim and to what extent we are willing to admit that they polemicized. Is Rashi just pure parshanut? In other words, he doesn't care what Christians say about this pasuk. Or does Rashi sometimes care enough to let his readers know, don't make the mistake that Christians make about how to read this pasuk? Okay? Now, we know some Rishonim, like Ramban and Radak, did this very much. Let's try to work on today on Rashi. And I would just like to leave you with some of the opinions of the scholars. All right? The names you should recognize in this discussion. One is Sara Kamin. She wrote before she married, and her maiden name was Yafet. Sara Yafet, so you might see it in both names. Sara Kamin. Elazar Twito. I took a course with him right in this classroom. The early 80s. Just passed away a few years ago. Sweet, sweet man. And also Twito. And they have very, very different approaches towards Rashi on this topic. Sarah Kamin, whose doctoral thesis was on the methodology of Rashi, claims in her thesis that Rashi often deals with Christian theologies in his parish. You just have to find it. She tells you how to find it. But she says that he often does. That you can read into many of Rashi's commentaries to be saying something that is meant to counter a Christian idea. Elazar Twito is kimat the polar opposite of this, by saying that unless he explicitly says so, Rashi never polemicizes against Christianity. He's not interested in that. He may have lived amongst Christians, but he's only interested in what he thinks the Bible says, not what he thinks the Bible isn't saying. Okay. Isn't it amazing how Rashi can be read in these two ways? Don't be so surprised. There are to date approximately 300 known commentaries to Rashi. Known as a super commentary, a commentary on a commentary. What's the job of such a perush? Is to tell you, where did Rashi get this statement? How did he change it? How did he answer it? How did he detract from it? How did he change what's written in the Gemara or the approach of the Gemara? How did Rashi find what? How did Rashi explain how the Gemara fits what's written in the pasuk into his particular comment, etc., etc.? And to defend Rashi against detractors. All right, so. Of the 300 Pirushim to Rashi, there are about 15 or so that are considered La'ila La'ila, really the great, great readers of Rashi. Maybe you know some of the names, who is considered to be the greatest reader of Rashi. Really, as if you're sitting here asking Rashi, what did you mean? Is Eliyahu Mizrahi. Familiar? No? He's a Pirush. Otsuma Forshe Rashi as the Mizrahi. 15th century. Then you've heard of Maharal in Prague. His parish to Rashi is known as the Gur Aryeh, just printed recently in 9 volumes. The Gur Aryeh. The Lavush. The Lavush commentary to the Halacha also has an excellent parish to Rashi. Okay. The one that was printed with the Mikros Gedolos is really an anthology of Perushe Rashi. It's known as Sitzei Chachamim. Right? It's very rarely is he actually original in what he's saying about Rashi. I mean, it's open enough, but it's mostly an anthology where he gives other perushim to what Rashi is saying. What am I getting at? Is that two of the top 15, almost anyone would be found on everyone's list, is a commentary called Sefer HaZikaron by Avraham Bakrat and Be'er Yitzchok. Yitzchok Ber Yisachar. Both a few hundred years old. And listen to how the dichotomy between these two in their understanding of Rashi's methodology. The Sefer HaZikaron says that Rashi is drash every time, unless he says the word pshat in his perush. You ever see when Rashi says zehu pshuto? Right? If Rashi doesn't write the word zehu pshuto, if you don't see the three-letter word pshat in Rashi's perush, then you can reasonably assume that that perush is drash. And the Be'er Yitzchak says the exact opposite. It says, in my opinion, Rashi is always pshat, get this, unless the word drash appears in his paper, which then will be drasho. Understand? Right, like when Rashi writes on the pasuk B'ni b'chori Yisrael, kan chotam HaKadosh Baruch Hu al... It says, B'ni b'chori Yisrael, b'chori, he says, is lashon gedula. Lashon gedula, shemar achani b'chorim, it's neidu. Zehu pshuto. And then he goes on to give another perush. Well, don't you agree that what follows after he says zehu pshuto would be the midrasha? This is the pshat of the pasuk. And then he goes on to say something else. Then that means what follows is not the pshat. Come on, would you agree? Right. So notice how Sefer Zikaron in the Be'er Yitzchak read Rashi so profoundly different. This one says Stam Rashi is Pshat, this one says Stam Rashi is Drash. So don't be surprised that Sarah Kamin can think that Rashi is polemicizing often, and Eloz HaTzvito who says Rashi never polemicizes. You see where it says Rashi 1 Kings 7:33? See that? Halfway down the page. This is the perush that Tweeto brings to prove that Rashi never polemicizes. This is a description of some of the decorations around the facade of the Beis HaMikdash. And it says, Kema'aseh ofen hamer kava. Now, what's an ofen hamer kava? The spokes of a wheel, right? Tirgeni on the sun, Oved galgalim merkava, Ofen betocha ofen, Shesi ba'ori, Kimo shamar b'yecheskel b'merkava gavoha. You know what Shesi ba'ori is? This week's parsha. That's a Shesi ba'ori. She says that there were those crosses all across the facade of the basement. I don't even put it here, but Rabbi Yosef Kara. Rabbi Yosef Kara on this pasuk in Melachim Aleph has a bird. He loses his lunch over this. Rabbi Yosef Kara goes crazy with Rashi. Claims that Rashi, you are giving strength to Christians who believe that Shlomo purposely put those designs on the facade of the Beis HaMikdash, knowing that one day they will be considered a holy symbol. You hear this? This parish of Rashi, Rashi's Talmud Chaver of Yosef Kara, not to be confused with the author of the Shulchan Aruch, lived 350 years later. Rashi's Talmud Chaver went very upset with Rashi for writing about crosses as a sign in the Beis HaMikdash. Now Rashi knew full well by the time he lived that a cross is an important symbol to Christianity. What do you think? What's halacha? If a Christian gives you a cross, are you allowed to keep it? Gives you a golden cross with a jewel on it. So this is a tshuva of the Ritbaz. Ritbaz says you can keep it. It's not a bit sorry. It's a simple. So then, with a tangled web we weave, the guy responded back to. He said that the local bishop gave him a cross. Can I keep it? And he said that when I appear before him, he wants me to wear it. Of course, the problem of not accepting such a gift is possibly profound ava. Really have to be careful. careful with that, so especially at that time. Okay. And you ever hear the joke about this guy is going into business, you know, in December time. He's a jeweler, and he wants to sell crosses and Jewish stars, you know, right? So he has to call up various distributors who deal with this. But he doesn't want the person on the other end to recognize that he is a Jew. So he says, I'd like to order 1,000 crosses. And he gives him a fake address, so no one can trace that he's ordering crosses. So the guy at the other end says, Yavan Devon, mitten Jesus on the top or Madonna the Jesus on top? In other words, it's a Jew on the other side also selling crosses. But I think that's not mean at all. If the cross has someone on it, then you certainly can't do that. If the cross is just a small case T, right, with a jewel on it, so big deal. Someone's named Theodore, so you have to, Okay, anyway. But you see what the Rav Yosef Kar is saying is that if Rashi cared what Christians thought about his perush, he would not have explained that a diagram on the base of Mikdash or a design on the base of Mikdash is a cross. What's the answer? Rashi doesn't care at all about what's on the base of Mikdash. Okay. I mean, doesn't care whether it's going to one time later be a Christian symbol. Okay, let's read the Rashi as you look at it. This is the top of the page. Vayerevei Boker Yom Echot. So the first thing you do whenever you approach a pasuk, let's try and anticipate. Vayerevei Boker Yom Echot. Okay, what is the thing that's bothering anyone approaching this pasuk? Go ahead. Why is Erev before Boker? Shalom does discuss that, but Shalom says that from Erev Boker we can derive that the day starts in the morning, not at night. But whatever it is, to teach us when the day starts, however you want to look at it. But what else is
it? Shouldn't grammatically it should be Yom Rishon?
Right. Since on the other days it says Yom Sheni, Shlishi, right? If you're going to say a chod, it should have said Yom Shnayim, Yom Shalosh, Yom Arba. Okay. So, with the thing of Parshanut, the stuff of Parshanut is inconsistency. Why are you being inconsistent? Torah should be consistent with number and gender. When the Torah is inconsistent, it requires some kind of comment. Okay? Alright, so let's read what Rashi writes. Rashi is a bit verbose here. He doesn't usually go so far out to tell you what his question is, but let's read small print, so I'll read it out. Ready? V'seder l'shon ha-parasha ha-yolo l'chtov yom rishon k'mo shekatu b'shar ha-yamim sheni shlishi revi'i. Okay? Question acknowledged? Right? Guys, in life, there will always be inconsistencies and problems. The best way to solve an inconsistency is not to resolve it, but to explain it away. Just brush it aside. Not to say this is not an issue to deal with, but it's not a problem. What do we mean? Why do we take what Rashi says for granted here? Is it true that the other days of creation it says Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, Yom Revi'i? Of course, we have Yom Shlishi, Yom Revi'i, right? But is it also true that in such a scheme that Echad doesn't appear? What would you have to do in order to figure it out? Look at other sources. When's the next time in the Tanakh where the word Echad appears? Right here in this story. when the Torah describes four rivers flowing out of Eden. It says, Shem HaNahar HaEchad, Shem HaNahar HaShini, Shem HaNahar HaShishi, HaNahar HaRabi'i. Okay? So what answer might you give for the initial question in Parahalo Pasuk Vav, because it appears first? Why does it say by Yerba Yoger Yom Echad and not Yom Rishon? What is a good way to resolve life's inconsistencies is to show?
It's a convention.
It's a convention. It's actually not inconsistent. Maybe more often than Rishon appears. But hey, the very next time in the Torah where I see the word that means first, Torah uses the expression Echad again. What's with that? Everyone with me? So Rashi had a way out. There was something you could do if you insist that this is a problem. Makashel Rashi, respond. I could have responded by saying, Rashi, it's a worthwhile question. But the fact is, that's a perfectly legitimate way to say first. And Baharaya, the very next time it appears, that's what happens. Let's read Rashi's answer. Rashi's answer is, Lama katav echad, lefi shahaya kadosh baruch hu yachid ba'olamahu, shelo nivru ha-malachim ad yom sheni, kach mefurash b'vareish. I'm joking with you. I didn't know this.
204. Is 204?
Is this 204?
Yeah.
Okay. Did it say when it's looking at?
Yes, it's 204.
1245.
Yeah, 1245.
Okay, I'd be happy to watch it for you. Might have to leave at 12:45. Okay. Alright, so you see where Rashi goes with this? By every book of Yamachal to teach there's one God. Alright? So I'm going with Sarah coming in. Especially since Rashi knows as well as I do. Any answer, I always assume when I read Rashi that any good shot that I might want to give in the Pasuk, he gave. He could have given. He knew. It was in his mind. Why didn't he write it? Because he thought something else was more important. Alright? What is Rashi saying here? So you have no Christian theology on this. But that's going to be more readily recognizable when we read the next parish of Rashi. Let's read it. When God creates man, he says, Na'ase odom b'tzalmenu kidmu sein. Let us make man. Okay? It's not only Christians who can have a field day with this. Right? The Zoroastrians, the deists, the dualists. Right? You ever meet a Zoroastrian? I converted to Zoroastrians once. Zoroastrians believe in two gods. One that is strengthened by our good deeds. That god is named Mazda. One God that is strengthened by our evil deeds that God is called Hormuzd. Okay. Man decides. God's the shadow of man. The השם צילחה, יהיה לי מנחה. Man decides how powerful God is. Don't be so surprised because we say something, you know, some things like that too. God chooses to shrink away from an evil world, so he seems to be less powerful. Even though no one helped God in the creation of man, lo nimna ha'katuf le'milameid derech eretz midat anava. God did not shy away from teaching us derech eretz and the quality of humility. She'yehei ha'gadol nimlach benotel reshut min ha'katon, so that a more important person should ask advice of a lesser person. Right? Give them a good feeling, and feel like you're on the team. Like you've just designed a new car, so you go to the people on the floor of the factory and you ask them, tell them, what do you think about the way this is coming up? You know, make people feel important, right?
Who's the katan here? Who's God talking to? Those angels that were created on the second day, right?
If it had said, let me make man, right?
You see, when it came to the creation of man, God was very interested in man knowing that there's a creator. Whether or not the sun and the stars and the comets and the mountains know that the creator or not, they have consciousness to know the creator, I'll leave that to the Kabbalists. But one thing is clear is that God only speaks about such an introduction when it comes to man's creation. Let me say, let me make a sun. Right?
Im kasuv e'ese adam, lo lamadnu she'yehei daber im bekdino. Elim atzmo. Shuvato kotav b'tzido, v'yivra esa adam lo kasav b'yivra'u. He created alone. When it came to having a meeting and taking advice, there are many people were involved. Many entities were involved. When it came to the actual creation, only God created. That's why it says Vayivra and not Vayivra'u. Okay? So what is this Rashi coming to teach? First, it teaches Derech Eretz trumps polemics. Right? Polemics was something very important to Rashi, according to come in. But Derech Eretz, everybody must agree, is even more important. He says so explicitly in the second parish. Right? But here's the Christian theology, I think you're pretty clear with it, is that who is God talking to when he says, let us make man? According to Christian theology. I'll give you a hint, he's not talking to one, he's talking to two entities. Correct. It's one talking to the other two of the Trinity.
Again, I don't get it all, but if you got indoctrinated, you go to a shir and you learn it from when you're 4 years old, you know, it's doctrine, so you accept it. But Christian theology teaches that when God was creating man, he said to entities outside of him, let us make man.
Okay? Now, the Catholics, Roman Catholics, had to indeed teach that the three is one, because otherwise there are idolatrous tendencies here. There are Christians to this day, this is anathema to them. They're called Unitarians. Have you heard of them? Unitarians. They don't go for this Trinity stuff. I don't know how you put any lipstick on it. It still looks like a rose aura. Okay. So if you have a theology that teaches that God created the universe with more than one entity, and you have an opportunity very early on, practically more than the first psukim in the Tanakh, in the Torah, to tell us that there is a hint in the Torah that there's only one entity, I'm going to take that opportunity and say so. Even though I could have said, Echad is a perfectly good way to say it first, but I'm taking the opportunity to say, Vayirvei Boker Yom Echad. Now, this, remember Rashi said that it's appeared in Bereishit Rabbah, right? Right? I'm not so sure. So I'm not sure that in its original form in Bereishit Rabbah, I'm not so sure that Bereishit Rabbah was thinking of Christians. I think Bereishit Rabbah was thinking of Persians.
Are you guys here for
1255? I think that the original Bereishit Rabbah was thinking about Persians. Let me explain. I told you about Mufmaz and Mormon minutes ago, right? So I'm getting this from the Kliyakar. It's an amazing parish of the Kliyakar. What does Erev represent and what does Boker represent? What does Erev mean to you? Your Bufya. Cloudiness, murkiness. Lack of clarity. What is Boker, Lebaker? It's the opposite, right? It's clear, right? Okay, so Erev are the forces of evil, that's Hormuz. Boker are the forces of good, Mazda. Right? Now you get it? By the Erev, by the Boker, Yom Echad. What is that coming to teach me? An important Jewish philosophical notion. That mipi Hashem lo yetzei atobos v'hara? Because Christianity has something that resembles this too. There's a Christ and there's an Antichrist. Following, that there's a Satan that actually acts against the volition of God. The book of Eov seems to say otherwise. Satan does not act against the permission of God. Not here to tempt us against any permission offer extended by God. It leads to its own problems. How can a beneficent God, how can an omni-benevolent God allow such evil? Right? Don't tell me it's only free will. I don't know what human free will let that earthquake kill 4,000 people. Or human free will made that asteroid kill 50,000 people, something like that.
So I think that what's going on in Rashi, if at least the Bereishit Rabbah, but I think Rashi was also sensitive to it, at least Kamin says so,
is that Rashi, by with his comment on Ve'erei Boker Yom Echad, especially with this twist of the Kliyakar, comes to teach us that there is one being and everything that happens in the universe can be attributed to that one being and not to two different strands, which the Zoroastrians certainly teach and Christianity may teach as well. Okay? All right? Okay, so that's what these four are. Let me just tell you this Rashbam, because this Rashbam in the middle, so Rashbam Shemot 32:19,
Elazar Tweedo, who was very firm in his reading that Rashi does not polemicize, was willing to admit that Rashbam does, and that's good. That's a good reading. It's not Tweedo's chiddush. Rashbam. The early scholars of Rashbam, dating back to the previous centuries, agreed that Rashbam sometimes introduced into his perush, because he says so. He says, Bozer Ani, Anisi, but this time answered the claims of the heretics. Right? It was very, sometimes very dangerous. You have to be careful when you put that into your parish. Generally, when he writes such a thing, it can be understood as a general objection to Avodah Zarah altogether. But you have to be careful. If in the year 1200 or 1150, you wrote something which was perceived by Christian censors to be anti-Christological, they'll kill you. They'll burn your town down. Right? So what's the example here? I'll leave that for you for an assignment. Okay? Your assignment next class is to take Rashbam to Shmos 32:19. Find out what he says. Right? Read the parish. It's where Moshe casts down the luchos. Alright? Okay. There's another point, is that what he says is so far from the pshat that that's almost a giveaway when Rashbam says something so far from pshat that you have to wonder, well, he must have been trying to say something else here. Let's start.